Francisco Zen Center. So you're going to get a Zen lecture tonight. The school of Zen that I practice is called Soto Zen. It's from Japan. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with San Francisco Zen Center. It was started by Suzuki Roshi, who came to the United States in 1959 to be a missionary in Japantown in San Francisco. And he met all these hippies, you know, back then, and got involved with the Americans, and then it was all downhill from there. Tonight I want to tell a story from this book, a little Zen story, and this is called The Golden Age of Zen. It's a great book if you're interested in stories about Zen teachers and Zen lineage and that kind of thing. Okay, here's the story. The two characters are Dao Wu, who's the teacher, and Lung Tan, who's a student. After some time, Lung Tan said to the master, "Since I have not received any essential instructions on the mind from you, master, since I came, I have not received any essential instructions on the mind from you, master." The master replied, "Ever since you came, I have not ceased for a moment to give you essential instructions on the mind." More mystified than ever, the disciple asked, "On what points have you instructed me?" The master replied, "Whenever you bring me the tea, I take it from your hands. Whenever you serve the meal, I accept it and eat it. Whenever you salute me, I lower my head in response. On what points have I failed to show you the essence of the mind?" Lung Tan lowered his head and remained silent for a long time. The master said, "For true perception, you must see right on the spot. And as soon as you begin to ponder and reflect, you miss it." At these words, Lung Tong's mind was open and he understood. Then he asked how to preserve this insight. The master said, "Give rein to your nature in its transcendental roamings. Act according to the exigencies of circumstances in perfect freedom and without any attachment. Just follow the dictates of your ordinary mind and heart. Aside from that, there is no holy insight." Okay, that's the story. So now let me talk to you about what I think that story is about. I've never been to a lecture at the Insight Meditation Center, and I've read some books by Sylvia Boorstein and things like that, and I think kind of the style of lecturing might be a little different, but you know, basically we're all doing the same thing in this Buddhist practice. So let me go back through it again. So the first line is, after some time, Lung Tan said to the master, "Since I came, I have not received any essential instructions on the mind from you, master." So this is pretty interesting. Lung Tan's been a student of his for a while, and Lung Tan ended up getting Dharma transmission from Dao Wu, which means that Dao Wu passed the torch on to Lung Tan and said, you know as much as I do. So there is a happy ending here at the end of all this. But at this point in time, he goes and he says, "Since I have not received any essential instructions from you, the mind, I don't think I've gotten anything from you. What's been going on here?" So the first thing that interests me about this is, we come to practice with these ideas about what we think is going to happen. I don't know about y'all, but when I first came to practice, I figured I was going to get enlightened. And I had a timetable. I thought it would take about 5 years. Well, I've been practicing much longer than 5 years, and as near as I can tell, it hasn't happened yet. So we go into practice with these ideas about what we think spiritual practice is all about. And in a way, one thing about Zen at San Francisco Zen Center is it's very formal, and we have this formal practice, and people wear robes, and we do all this ritual and all this stuff. So it's really easy to fall into that trap of thinking that something special is going to happen, or that you have to do something special to have some kind of insight into practice. So we get these ideas and we go into that situation. So Lung Tong's going to Dao Wu and said, "Hey, nothing's happening here. What's going on?" Because he has this preconceived idea about what he thinks Zen teaching or any kind of Buddhist teaching or any kind of teaching, right, that we do. We have this idea about what we think it's going to be. Like, you know, you read those books about Zen and archery, and we all know they never aim at the target, right? So I guess if, you know, you went to one of those classes and the teacher said, "Now just, you know, right away aim at that target," you go, "Hey, what's going on here? This isn't Zen," right? So you come with these preconceived ideas. And when we do that, we miss what's going on. So we all know this teaching of being in the present moment, being in the present moment, being open to what's going on right in front of us, not bringing preconceived ideas into the situation. That, you know, it's so easy to say that. That sounds like such an easy practice, and it's so difficult to do. It's so hard just to be right where we are. It's so hard to listen, you know? I don't know about you, but sometimes I get in conversations and I discover that I'm like doing all this talking. But really, I know what I think. I really would like to know what the other person thinks. So I just think to myself, okay, Kokai, you know, just slow down here. Listen to what's going on. So we just, you know, kind of want to throw this small self of ours right in there with all these ideas and concepts that we have. So just to, you know, Lung Tong, he couldn't be present with what was happening in the situation. He had these ideas. So then, because of that, he goes to the teacher and he says, "Hey, I don't think that there's any teaching going on here. And that's what I came for." Of course, he says that just respectfully to his teacher. So the teacher says, "Ever since you came, I have not ceased for a moment to give you essential instructions about the mind." So the teacher's saying, "Hey, I've been teaching you all along. Ever since you walked in the door, I've been teaching you." And then Lung Tong's completely mystified because he's missed all this. And he says, "Well, on what points have you instructed me?" And then the master said, "Whenever you bring me the tea, I take it from your hands. Whenever you serve the meal, I accept it and eat it. Whenever you salute me, I lower my head in response. On what points have I failed to show you the essence of mind?" So this is an interesting part, and it talks a lot about the student-teacher relationship. About a year after I'd come to practice Zen, water, very good. So about a year after I came to practice Zen, I went to the Minnesota Zen Center. And the Minnesota Zen Center, his founding teacher was Katagiri Roshi, a Japanese priest from Japan. And Katagiri Roshi, you know, he brought all of the Japanese teachings with him. And we were at their monastery in Iowa. And Katagiri had this little cabin sort of up on the rise. And whenever we had a 4 and 9 day, which was a day off is like, that's after you've already sat 3 hours of Zazen, and then you have your day off that lasts until 5:30 in the afternoon. But anyway, we would have our day off, and they would have these communal meals. And Katagiri Roshi would kind of come down on the little rise there, and he'd have one attendant carrying an umbrella, and the other attendant would be carrying incense for him, and then they'd go up and offer incense, and then they'd go through the meal line, and Katagiri Roshi, one of them would be holding his plate, and the other one would be dishing food, and, you know, he'd say, "Well, yes, I'd like some carrots." He'd say, "Roshi, would you like carrots? Roshi, would you like some beans?" You know, and he'd say, "Hi, you know, please dozo," and they'd serve him. So we had a tea a little later on, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what is going on here? This is like some kind of servant scene, you know, the master and the servants, and I wasn't particularly impressed by it. And it certainly didn't fit my idea of practice, because I thought that Katagiri Roshi was kind of taking advantage of these people. So I asked him, I said, you know, what's the relationship? What's going on here? And what he said to me was, he said, you know, the student-teacher relationship, and in particular, since there were three of them, he said, you know, we're like a tripod together. I rely on my two attendants, and they rely on me, and we have this relationship with each other, the three of us, that makes up this kind of balanced tripod here, that makes up this whole that needs to happen together. And I was like really, really impressed by that. And later on, when I had the opportunity to be an abbot's assistant myself and to work with the abbot and to, you know, be engaged in that activity, that intimate activity of just daily working with the teacher and doing things. And, you know, my job was to support the teacher. And the teacher's job was to support me in the sense that I got a chance to be with the teacher and just do everyday things for the teacher and just see, you know, how they conducted themselves, how the abbot of Zen Center did things and related to other people, and to get to see all these relationships. So it was very fruitful. And it certainly didn't feel like this... sometimes, you know, it didn't feel like I was a servant. It is a very hierarchical relationship. But at the same time, you learn things, you know, depending on whether, you know, you're here or wherever place you are in that relationship, there's always something to be learned from it. And ultimately, of course, no matter what relationship we may be in some kind of hierarchy, ultimately, of course, is we're all the same, right? So at the same time we have vertical relationships, all of those relationships are also horizontal at the same time, because we're all human beings, right? We're just all human beings in this world, working on our practice, getting through our day, making mistakes, being skillful. So that's a very horizontal relationship. And there's a lot of generosity in that relationship when we allow each other the space to just be a regular person. You know, you let your boss just be who they are at the same time that it's okay that there's this vertical relationship going on. Anyway, I'm getting off the track here. There's a student-teacher relationship. In that relationship, there is, in this story, I think there's a sense of intimacy, a kind of respectful intimacy in the story. The student gives the teacher tea. The teacher accepts the tea. The student gives the teacher a meal. The teacher accepts the meal. The student bows and the teacher bows. There's a kind of respectfulness there. And there is that intimacy that we have with people when we're just doing those kind of day-to-day activities. And that gets back to this idea of thinking about practice as being special. Because what this story here is, you know, I think sometimes we can get caught in these stories because they sound exotic. You know, here we have this Chinese student from the 8th century in China, and we assume that they're in a monastery somewhere, and they're all sitting around, I don't know, on little tatami mats or something, you know, with delicate little teacups and serving and things like that. But that, of course, isn't the point of the story. The point of the story is that the student and the teacher are just engaged in these day-to-day activities, right? So if you drive your teacher somewhere, that's just a day-to-day activity. If you stop at Denny's to have breakfast with your teacher, that's just, you know, eating with your teacher. And that's also the kind of practice that we all do every day, right? We just go to work. We interact with our families, do all those kinds of things. They're not special, but that's where our practice is. Our practice is in that intimacy of those relationships that we have, and how we manifest our understanding in those relationships. So the teacher here is completely manifesting that understanding of nothing special, just doing whatever the daily activity is, and the student is looking for something special. Even when you're in the monastery, I spent 4 years living at Tassajara, which is Zen Center's monastery. Even when you're in the monastery, it's nothing special. Because if that activity is special, then there's a certain growth that's not happening. It's not until it just becomes your day-to-day life that, you know, you get to the real juice of things. Because no matter where you are, your practice is about, you know, these relationships. Your practice is about the people that you're with. So when I was at the monastery, you know, there were people who didn't like each other. Or, like, I understand that you guys have, what is it, the Vipassana Vendetta and the, how does that go? And I guess that's where, you know, you're doing a retreat and you're not talking and you decide that you don't like somebody. You don't even know them. You're just at their... Well, it's the same way everywhere, right? We just have these things that manifest, these ideas that we have about what's going on. Or we fall in love with somebody or something like that. And, you know, that's just our minds doing what they do. But we can't practice, you know, until that's the juice. You know, that's where all the stuff's happening is in there. So even in those kind of special situations, that has to be happening. That has to be arising to give us an opportunity to work with whatever's coming up. I was speaking about not things not being special. I had dinner over at Burger King tonight. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I haven't eaten at a Burger King in maybe, I don't know, 10 years. And it reminded me of a story, which you might know. Which is, the story is that Suzuki Roshi was being driven from Tassajara to San Francisco by one of his students. I guess this was back in the 70s. And this was a very zealous 20-year-old guy who was practicing down at the monastery, driving his teacher back to San Francisco, and they stopped at a restaurant. And he was a very sincere practitioner, and he ordered tofu and brown rice and vegetables. And Suzuki Roshi ordered a hamburger. And the punchline to the story is that when the food arrived, Suzuki Roshi pushed the hamburger over to the student and took the tofu and rice for himself. So the student had this idea that, you know, he was going to be really, this was Zen practice, right? This is being spiritual, eating tofu and rice and vegetables. And Suzuki Roshi was going to punch a hole in that balloon. And I guess he did, because it's a story that goes around a lot. And it, so this was Suzuki Roshi saying, you know, nothing special, guys. Just eat your hamburger. Just do your practice. The other thing about this story is that, you know, Dao Wu was, or Lung Tong, the student, was looking for some kind of special teaching. You know, he probably thought that Dao Wu was going to, like, sit him down and say, now, Lung Tong, let's talk about the five aggregates here and, you know, the Eightfold Path, and we're going to go through all this stuff. And that, none of that happened. So he was, like, going, well, where's the beef, right? Where's the teaching here? But the teaching was happening just in the manifestation of the students, of the teacher's understanding. So once again, you know, it goes back to just the teacher embodying their understanding of practice, which is true for all of us, right? We really, it's not so much what we say, it's what we embody in our practice. So if, you know, I sit up here and do this, if I leave here tonight and, you know, go cut someone off on the freeway on my way back to San Francisco and flip them the finger. So, you know, what's that about? So our practice is manifested in what we do. And I will tell you that I am kind of impatient, but I don't do that stuff anymore. So our practice is really just, you know, how we negotiate in the world, how it is that we... In Zen, we talk a lot about how you handle objects and your respectful relationship to objects as well as to people. Just this idea that, like, knives, and that we put a lot of emphasis on kitchen practice, how you work in the kitchen. And it has to do with this idea of that's an area, working is an area where we have an opportunity to really manifest our understanding. how do we, relate to the things on our desk? When you are using a pencil or a pen at work or at home, and you go to put it next to you, do you put it and then open your hand and it drops to the desk? Or do you actually place it on the desk? So that, that embodies a lot of things. It embodies this sense of completion, that you've picked the pen up and actually followed it all the way through down to the desk. So that's a kind of mindfulness practice, right, of actually getting it there before you go to the next thing. Or do you just kind of like your start and then your mind goes over here and you open your hand and it drops on the desk? So just that kind of relationship with things and that kind of relationship with people and with the events of our lives. So our everyday lives is this fertile ground, once again, for the manifestation of our understanding. So this is what Dao Wu is doing, is he has been manifesting his understanding throughout this whole time with Lung Tan. He has been patiently, probably, because we know he's enlightened, right? So Dao Wu's probably been patiently waiting for Lung Tan to come to him. He's probably realized that Lung Tan was not responding to him, was not meeting him where he was. So he probably is happy that Lung Tan has come to him and said, hey, what gives here? Why don't, I understand what's going on. So after Dao Wu says, on what points have I failed to show you the essence of mine, Lung Tan lowered his head and remained silent for a long time. He's confused like all the rest of us. It's there's a story in the Vimalakirti Sutra, which is a Mahayana sutra, and Vimalakirti does this thing called the lion's roar, which is his silence, which completely manifests his understanding. And in the sutra, Vimalakirti's lion's roar, this is Buddha's lion's roar, shows that, he's completely understands, he's completely enlightened, he's completely there in the situation. So Lung Tong's silence is not Vimalakirti's lion's roar. Lung Tong's silence is a silence, I think, that we all have when we're faced with this kind of confusing conundrum as exactly what's going on here. So this is a nice story because, a lot of these Zen stories, you read them and you go, what? What was that? This story has an entryway to it, so you don't sit there and go, gosh, I'm never going to figure this out. So, and the other thing in this story is Lung Tan does not become enlightened here. He, he's like going, okay. So he is silent, and he's also thinking. He's kind of mulling over what the teacher said. And meanwhile, of course, Dao Wu is just standing there. He's just waiting for Lung Tan to have something happen. So he's just, patiently, kindly, I suspect, waiting for this to happen. And then he takes pity on him. Because in Zen stories, when the teacher tells you the stuff, right, they're taking pity on you. So he tells him, he says, for true perception, you must see right on the spot. As soon as you begin to ponder and reflect, you miss it. So at these words, Lung Tong's mind was open and he understood. Now again, his mind was open and he understood. In the Pali Suttas at the end, it's like everybody goes into some form of samadhi, right? The Buddha tells a teaching or whatever, and then some of the people have some kind of insight, and then other people have other kinds of different levels and stuff like that. And usually in these Zen koan stories too, the nut comes down and hits him on the head, and bingo, oh, I've got it now, right? But that doesn't happen here. So Lung Tong is kind of like the rest of us. I kind of get that. I got a piece of that. Okay, so I have some insight here. So he says, for true perception, you must see right on the spot. So for us to truly perceive what's happening, we have to be present. We have to truly have a perception, we must be present with the causes and conditions and everything that's arising in that moment to have a skillful and understanding response. So It's like the nexus and the constellation of all of this presentness at that moment in order for us to perceive and see what's actually going on. So if you remember the beginning of the story, that's the beginning of Lung Tong's problem, right? He came with all these preconceived ideas about what was going on. He wasn't present with what was happening, so he wasn't getting what was going on. So Dao Wu is saying, you know, if you really want to see, if you really want to have true perception, you have to be right here, right present, right here in the present moment. And then he says, as soon as you ponder and reflect, you miss it. So as soon as we go off in our heads, because pondering and reflecting aren't necessarily bad things, you know, but when you're right in the moment, in this particular case with his teacher, and the teaching is going on with the drinking of tea and the offering of food and the things that were described earlier, in these daily kinds of activities, when you stop and start thinking about it, you have to pull away from the present moment, right? When we stop and go inward, which is, I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do, but in this situation, he's saying, you know, if you're not truly present with me, and you go inside and you kind of pull away and start to ponder and reflect, then there's this separation that happens. You're no longer in the present moment, right? So it's the same thing like we're sitting meditating, and in Zen, you know, they say, well, don't invite your thoughts to tea. So there you are, doing whatever it is that your instruction is that you're doing, and the next thing you know, you're back at work having a fight with your coworker, with having the best lines, right? Thinking up the best thing to say. So it's like you get completely immersed in that, and then you're not in the present moment anymore. And, you know, usually the instruction is, right, okay, come back to the present moment. Come back to what it is that you're doing. And you just, you know, in Zen anyway, that's our meditation structure, you know, instruction. We just keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. Go away, come back, go away, come back. So Dao was saying, you know, come back, come back. Just keep coming back to what's going on here. So at that moment, Lung Tong had this insight about this idea of being present, about starting to understand what the teachings were that he was being offered by Dao Wu. That brings up the idea that, you know, everything is our teacher. Every relationship we have, every interaction that we have is a teacher for us. You know, the universe will tell you what's wrong with your practice. It's like the universe will tell you what's right with your practice. Of course, it's wonderful to have a teacher, and one should have a teacher to have that kind of relationship. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we don't have to do anything kind of religious, in the sense that we don't have to do anything that we think of as like Buddhist practice with a capital B, in order to understand how to practice. What I mean, I'm getting a little convoluted here, but what I mean by this is, my sense is that in Vipassana practice, pretty much everybody's doing a lay practice, and you're just, you know, going to work and you're using the teachings around that. I think that at a place like San Francisco Zen Center, where there's a lot of ritual and people wear robes, it's really easy. I talked about this earlier. It's so easy to get caught up in that as thinking that that's your practice. And sometimes people have been at the Zen Center for a couple years and they have to leave, or, you know, they can't work at Zen Center anymore. They can't come to Zazen so much or whatever. And they'll say, what's my practice? I'm leaving. I don't know what my practice is. So it's like they get caught in that ritual of as practice, as their Buddhist practice. So you guys are really lucky, I think. Now, maybe I'm making assumptions about your practice because I don't know, but I think to really do a lay practice, you don't get caught in that, you know, because really the things that you have to work with is your everyday life. And, you know, you come and do meditation and listen to lectures and things, but, you know, you don't have all these kind of trappings around it. So it's much easier just to see that what's happening right in front of you is your practice. So then Lung Tong says, well, how do I preserve this insight? Now, in a Zen story, Lung Tong's really lucky that Dao Wu didn't hit him over the head or something. Because, you know, in Zen stories, the student does not say, wait, let me write that down. I mean, tell me that again, would you, so I can get that? So Dao Wu was being really nice and kind to him by actually repeating and clarifying what he had said earlier. He says, give rein to your nature in its transcendental roamings. Act according to the exigencies of circumstances in perfect freedom and without any attachment. And just follow the dictates of your ordinary mind and heart. Aside from that, there's no holy insight. So, give rein to your nature in its transcendental roaming. So, give rein to the part of your nature that what we would say is beyond your small self. You know, give rein to that part of your nature that is not attached, that doesn't get caught in greed, hate, and delusion. So, you know, let this generousness, let the part of you that can open and go beyond, let that have its reign. Let it be able to manifest itself. Kategori Roshi used to say, you know, let your life force bloom. So let the flower open. And he says, act according to the exigencies of circumstances. So once again, this idea of your actions are in response to what's happening right in the moment. So easy to do, right? But right in the moment, there you are. You're going to have this response that isn't tainted by all your greed, hate, and delusion. And you're going to do the most skillful thing right in that situation based on the causes and conditions of what's arising. So you're going to act according to the circumstances in perfect freedom and without any attachment. Just follow the dictates of your ordinary mind and heart. We have this idea in Zen about your Buddha nature, are the part of you that has this ability to completely blossom, is not something different from your ordinary self. Because when you have enlightened mind, it's not like suddenly you got a different brain, you know, or a different body or something. There's this transformation has happened, but it still is this ordinary mind that you have that has been transformed. So we have this idea that there is this ordinary mind. And the ordinary mind is afflicted with greed, hate, and delusion, or with ignorance. And in Zen, we don't usually talk about so much this idea that, you know, you have these afflictions that you want to get rid of. But there is this idea that we have to have something to do. So we work on these practices. We work on developing compassion. We work on, you know, working with our greed and being present moment and seeing where we're getting caught on all those things. But ultimately, we want to reach the state of non-dualism. We want to reach a place where it's not about them and us. It's not about concepts or not concepts, even though this is the world that we function in. We function in the world of form. So we can't get away from this kind of relative way of thinking, right? We still have to drive down the street and make decisions about, am I going to turn right or am I going to turn left, and all those kinds of things. And that's your ordinary mind, too. And also, there's this ability to do it completely in the present, completely present in a non-dualistic, non-grasping, non-delusional way, and that ordinary mind is enlightened mind. So that ordinary mind is the mind that's free from greed, hate, and delusion. So when he says this part about act according to the circumstances in perfect freedom and without any attachment, and just follow the dictates of your ordinary mind and heart, but that ordinary mind of heart has been a transformed mind and heart. It's been transformed into this non-dualistic, non-grasping state of mind that's going to respond with what is completely appropriate in that given situation. If you go back to the beginning of the story, that's what the teacher's doing. At the beginning of the story, this example about giving the tea, having the food, responding, that's ordinary mind responding in a non-dualistic way. It's ordinary mind just being totally present and having the appropriate response. There isn't anything else required. Dao Wu is completely present for Lung Tong. He's present with an openness and generosity which allows Lung Tong to be completely who he is within that given situation. And that generosity allows Lung Tong to flower. Like, for example, if somebody gets angry with us and we respond with kindness to their anger, not in a way that's pity or not in any kind of condescending way, but just, with the compassion of knowing that we too get caught in these places, right? And just being able to respond to someone's anger without being angry back, without being defensive, just being open to that person and kind towards them and accepting them right where they are gives them the space to grow. It gives them the space to kind of drop the anger in a way. Like, when we get angry with people and somebody, if you go at somebody and you're mad at them, right, and then they push back on you, your tendency is to be defensive. Your tendency is to push back and then you get in the struggle with each other. But when you are angry with somebody and their response to you is kindness, most of us kind of like go, oh, hey, what's going on here? It stops you a little bit. Now, you might be so totally crazed at the moment that it all goes right by you. But, if you practice for a while or whatever, most times we go, oh, that's really nice. You're driving your car, you do something stupid, and the other person says, please go ahead. It's fine. It's not a problem. That's great. It doesn't escalate into all this craziness that we experience out in the road. So that is this ability to, be generous and be open and allow someone else to have that space to grow. And that is what Dao Wu is doing with Lung Tong. He's just being there in this very solid, balanced way, being open to whatever is about to arise. So that is that enlightenment within ordinary mind, the enlightenment within ordinary activities that's arising. So then he says, aside from that, like basically what he's just described is the whole ball of wax. And then he says, hey, aside from that, there's no holy insight. So once again, he's going back to this idea, there's not some kind of special thing going on here. We're not engaged in some kind of specialness. We're just meeting things as they are. So it doesn't require some kind of holy insight. It just requires that we're present with this open mind and that we're willing to drop our greed, which is really hard to do, drop our attachments. I'm sure you guys all know the Four Noble Truths, right? And the place where we get hung up is we want something, we don't, we want something or we push things away. So this ability to kind of be in that middle space where we're not, we're not pushing things away from us and we're also not grasping stuff. We're just willing to be right there in that, right down there, down the center with equanimity. That's all I would like to say about this story. Thank you very much. Comments, questions? Yes, sir.
On your point of simplicity, I'm reminded of a quote I read, I don't know who said it, but it was some Eastern philosopher from the past, that said, before enlightenment, chopping wood and carrying water. After enlightenment, chopping wood and carrying water.
Absolutely.
That sort of sums it all up.
Yeah. But what happens in there? between the before and after, of course, that's the great conundrum for all of us, is how do we, how do we get there? Is it possible to get there from here? Well, yes and no. You know, somehow it happens. But I don't think you can know just how that happens. Okay? You guys ready to go home 20 minutes early? Okay, thank you.